You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Guidepost. It's been a hot second since you've gotten kind of one of these rapid podcasts. So today we're going to be talking about Albies, and there's going to be some interesting stuff and some good news. And joining us on the podcast today is Captain Ray Jarvis, one of our guides in New England. Ray, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Tony. How you doing?
You get the tuna stink off you?
Not yet. Just clean the boat off. I'm next.
Sorry about that, man.
Yeah,
sorry about
no, that's, it's all good. That is a
commitment to conservation when you get done with a day of guiding and you don't even get the tuna stink off you.
I mean, there's worse stinks to have on me. So
that's true. I've been there. So Ray is Salt of the Earth is the name of his business, and he guides up right on the border of Rhode Island and Massachusetts. So he fishes all those fabled waters that everyone hears about. I had the pleasure of fishing with Ray in May, just before the whole Guides Association was up there for the Cheeky Schoolie tournament, and had a really, really enjoyable time. Great guide, tons of information, knows where the fish are. Just one of those fantastic days on a boat. So I have a little boat time with Ray, and can't say enough great things about the business that he's running up there. So how is, you do it all, right? I mean, stripers, albies, tuna, like,
yeah, I do a little bit of everything.
Restore sea crafts, like there's nobody's business, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of a little bit obsessed with sea crafts. So I got a couple of those, 20 and a 23, and, you know, picked them both up kind of half restored and finished off the job. But love those boats, and they allow me to be versatile and fish, you know, a variety of different species at different times of the year. So I really like to just, you know, fish. So whether it's tuna, inshore, offshore, striped bass, bonito, false albacore, you name it.
Whatever bites, right?
Yeah. I'm happy to get after it. So,
yeah. Like, come on, man. You know, that's what we're all in it for. One of our guys in Louisiana, Ty Hibbs, the name of his business is Whatever Bites.
Yeah.
Cause there's so much to fish for, and people are like, they'll book with him and be like, oh, I want to catch a 30-pound redfish. And you're like, he's like, you're going to catch whatever bites.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Like, whatever opportunity presents itself, that's what we're going for. So
yeah, and that's kind of the adventure, you know? And up here we have so many different species. It's nice because each day kind of brings a different experience.
Yeah, I want to point out real quick, because I think we're going to turn this around fast. You know, we're thinking about all our people in Louisiana. They've been through this before. This ain't their first rodeo. But, you know, friends in Lafourche and, you know, Chauvin and Houma. And looks like y'all are going to catch the worst of it here. It's probably getting awful close right now. So we know you're tougher than a $2 steak, all of you. And this ain't the first time you've seen it, but I hope you get through unscathed and power comes back on quick, and everything's cool and everything stays awesome and everything that we love about Louisiana stays in place. Again, not the worst storm that they've ever seen. Talking to a couple of our guys last night, it was kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever. It's kind of funny. Hey, Ray, that's where my father grew up. Like, my family's been in Louisiana forever, and two of my sisters were born there, and then my parents moved to Tennessee where I was born. So huge love of that area. And I will tell you, like, those, like I said, those people are tougher than a $2 steak. Like, that last storm that hit Charleston a couple of years ago, maybe like 5-6 years ago, you know, at the time my mom was still alive and I was worried about her more than anything. You know, my parents are in their 80s and they live right on the water on the Ashley. And I was like, man, could y'all, I got big old white oaks in their yard. And I'm like, could y'all please just like go inland? And my dad's like, I live through Camille, the 180-mile-an-hour winds before, you know, before all the wind measuring devices broke. He's like, this is nothing. It's category two. So you're just like, God,
they can handle it.
There's just no listening to me. You know what I mean? There's no like, dude, mom's 83. Like, get mom out of it. Go get a hotel room somewhere. Just take the dogs. Why are you going to put mom? I said, Jesus Christ. So anyway, they're all hard headed down there. So I just, let's just hope they get the power back on quick and everybody's good. So I just throw that out there for them. Cause that thing's bearing down on them right now. So you got to go tagging, with our science team, and you got to be put some telemetry tags out. What'd you think about that dog and pony show, man? It's pretty wild how efficient they are, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was awesome. Once we boated those fish, they were, you know, incision made, the device was inserted, stitched up and off the boat in 2 minutes or less. So they really had it dialed and, you know, it was just like a fun experience in general. We caught some really big albies that day and it was really sporty out. So
which is kind of a new thing for y'all, right? I mean, y'all don't, you're not locked into huge, like, Cody's albies in Florida are like your dream come true.
The albie, the size class of the albies we've been seeing this year are far and away much bigger than we usually see. Why that is, I don't know. I mean, obviously people occasionally catch big albies up here. They're weighed in on the Vineyard tournament every year. But I'm talking like where I fish generally in Buzzards Bay, the islands out towards Rhode Island, Newport area. The albies we see are maybe 5 to 7 pounds on average. And they're a lot of fun.
Super fun fish.
Wicked fun fish. That's why everybody loves them. Okay. You get into these bigger fish that are 28, 30 inches, 31 inches, and those fish are 15 to 20 pounds. I mean, some of the fish we had.
That's 10, 11 weight. That's bigger gear.
Yeah, that's much bigger gear. You know, that day we were tagging, we had to actually chase down a couple fish on 4,000 class reels because, you know, in the conditions it was sporty, this and that, but these fish chose a direction and just went. And a couple times we had to kind of turn the boat and head for them just to gain a little on them.
But yeah, man, that's
just cool. A fun day. And we put tags in some really big fish. So
yeah. Great. And it's super cool to kind of see those results.
Yeah,
you know, from the telemetry tags and know that you played like an active role in it. And, you know, I mean, these fish are amazing. The more that we learn about them, you know, from where you live up, you know, Nantucket Sound, the farthest northern part of Rhode Island, to make it down to the Keys in 30 days.
It's insane.
Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
It's impressive just seeing that, you know, I had a recapture from Buzzards Bay that I tagged a fish in Buzzards Bay last September and it was recaptured. I forget the exact date, but it wasn't that much longer, you know, maybe a couple months later, if that, but it was off of Key West.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, I forget how many miles that is exactly, but I mean, that's.
So you tagged, I actually have it. Because I wanted to talk more about this and actually be prepared, which is unusual for my podcast, for the Guys Association, the Guy Post podcast. So you tagged that in 9/12/2023 in Nantucket. And it was recaptured 2/4 off Key West.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. But it's, I mean, totally, there's proof that those fish go up and down the eastern seaboard.
Well, Ray, I mean, since we're talking about this already, the guide community's, you know, wound tighter than a $2 watch up there. Y'all all talk to each other. You're all friends. Y'all get along and share information. And it's a pretty awesome community.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so as soon as y'all get a recapture, it's like tom-tom drums. You know what I mean? Like, everybody knows about it. Like, even before we do. Hey, I got a, you know, I got a tagged Albie. Hey. And all the guys are, you know, sharing the information and talking. So, since, like, 2 weeks, in the last 2 weeks, we have gotten three returns, three, on Albies that have been tagged by our guides.
Yeah.
That had a 10-day recapture.
It's crazy.
What do you, I mean, as a, you know, as a guide, what does that make you feel? So let me explain it. Before you answer the question, I'll explain it just in case the audience is like, what the hell did Tony just say?
Yeah.
So three fish were recaptured in the last couple of days. Let's say the last 10 days.
Right.
Last 7 days, three fish were captured that had our tags in them, our red tags in them, the Floyd tags, not the telemetry tags. All three of those fish, their original capture date was within 10 days of the recapture.
So that's wild.
Fish landed on the 30th of August, recaptured on the 7th of September. And again, and again, and again. And the funniest thing is a couple of them were recaptured by our guides. You know, Jogo... Yeah. Jogo tagged a fish on the 30th from Guerrilla Tactics Sport Fishing, and Peter Fallon recaptured it on like the 7th or the 8th. So it's like,
I mean, those fish are just kind of bouncing around the sound there. So it's, you know, that's fast. So maybe indicative of not that many fish around.
Yeah. And,
but,
you know, we keep saying, like, well, I guess one of the, there's a lot of criticisms when we started this project.
Yeah.
But one of the criticisms was, you know, oh, they all die. They don't have swim bladders. They sink and every one of them dies. Well, you know, we've tagged, I don't know how many with the telemetry tags, which tell us we know pretty darn good if they died or not, or if a shark ate them or something.
Right.
And not many of them are dying. I hope to have a report on that by like the end of the month. But the mortality rate is not that significant. Fish. Yeah, they're tougher than they're tougher than we give them credit for. I don't live in a, you know, I'm not illusioned into thinking, some of them die. But it's not like, it's more like 10%. It's not like 50%. Trust me. And we'll have the science on that shortly.
I think people may think that just because the amount of blood they see when they land those fish and how they kind of lose their color pretty quickly. But, you know, any tuna that you stick, it's going to bleed like a pig, whether it's a pinprick or not.
Also, I mean, they fight like a pit bull on crack. So they have like, you know, they have all those capillaries and that red blood.
Yeah, everything.
And they can recharge themselves versus like a white, you know, white meat fish. Who gets, you know, that lactic acid buildup, and, you know, they can oxygenate their muscles like nobody, ram breather, ram feeder. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I just think they're tougher. What we're going to learn is that they're a little bit tougher than we gave them credit for. So you got to see the telemetry stuff. You got to actively participate in that. Mm-hmm. You're doing the Floyd tagging already for us. I think you're even, you're tagging some bluefin tuna too, right? Occasionally?
Occasionally tagging bluefin, also taking biological samples for the bluefin collaborative, you know, whenever possible.
Yeah.
And then tagging bonito, Atlantic bonito, and false albacore as well.
Yeah.
So just kind of doing whatever I can. I enjoy the science side of it, and, you know, it's in my interest and the interest of my business to participate in these projects because I learn more, and if I can help out any of the fisheries that I benefit from, you know, it's only fair.
Yeah, I mean, love the attitude. You know, that's why you're one of our folks, man. Because, you know, a long time ago, I looked at the I looked at the current state of fisheries and management and policy and everything else. And I was like, yeah, we're going to be in trouble. Right.
Yeah.
Unless we all start to care a lot, because it's a mess and it's not an exact science. Voice. Yeah. So, I mean, we're, you know, we're thrilled to have people like you doing this stuff, which gets me to like the real meat and potatoes of this podcast. So on Tuesday, the 17th, I should know this because it's my wife's birthday. So it better. I'm up. This is now emblazoned in my mind. Tuesday. This is like a very treacherous time of year for me, Ray, because my anniversary just passed, and the birthday comes up, and they're like, slightly more than a week apart.
Yeah.
So I got to be on my, I got to be on my best behavior, which is not saying much, for like half of September. Yeah, so there's that. So on the 17th of September at 9 a.m. in Kingston, Massachusetts, and I'm going to put my readers on here and look at the website really quick, and I can, I'll give the address here in 1 second, because we may want y'all to attend. So,
yeah. It's not far. I mean, it's right near Plymouth, so south of Boston, kind of convenient location. So,
it is 9 a.m. September 17th, Kingston Townhouse, 26 Evergreen Street, Kingston, Mass. So Kingston Townhouse, 26 Evergreen Street, Kingston, Mass. That's going to be the meeting, 9 a.m. September 17th. Right. Now, here is the thing. We say all the time on this podcast. Now, granted, before I say this, yes, it is me. I have had some dust ups with some people at Mass DMF, but I will take 50% responsibility for that, being who I am and how easily agitated I can get in my advancing years. So I'm not going to put that all on them. But we say over and over and over again that y'all don't know how lucky you are in New England to have Mass DMF leading your fisheries. ASGA gave the first, you know, Hero of Conservation Award to Mike Armstrong, who just retired as the fisheries director of Mass DMF. We think the world of Bill Hoffman, Nicola Meserve. Every single time we work with them, they are, it's all about science. It's pure science. They want the results. They attract the best and the brightest up and comers. Cannot say, with the complicated fisheries they deal with and the incredible vast amount of stakeholders, they do an A-plus job.
Yeah,
they mess up on stuff every once in a while. So do I. So does everyone in life.
Everybody does.
But I'm going to give them an A plus across the board since we've been working with them since the Guides Association started. Yeah. So that said, we started hearing rumblings that a while back, long time ago, that Mass DMF wanted to put some regulations in for Atlantic Bonito and False Albacore. And in the meantime, all of our bandwidth kind of got sucked up with North Carolina coming out and being the first people to put it on the agenda, put it on a docket for the fisheries meeting. And we're working through that process. And thank you to all of our advocates that have helped us with that, because we have completed round two of three and we're going into round three. And we think we're finally going to get some state management on these, on False Albacore in North Carolina. So yesterday we started hearing rumors, in the last week, we started hearing rumors that there may be an agenda item for this meeting about, for in Massachusetts, in Kingston, that there might start the process of looking into for guardrail management of Atlantic Bonito and False Albacore. And I think this came to a head, Ray, yep, because y'all have been neck deep in Atlantic and small Atlantic Bonito.
Oh,
for
yeah,
2 years, right?
Mostly this year. I mean, this year it's been like I haven't seen maybe ever in my life. Maybe like 10 years ago, it was really good. And, you know, years since we see them, but spotty. And they tend to show up here off Westport pretty early. But what we've seen this year is literally like nothing I've personally seen. I mean, they are everywhere.
And then what happens when fish are available on a broad scale like that?
They get taken advantage of.
People knock the piss out of them, right?
Yeah, as has been happening up here.
So you know, Ray, a little bit north of you, yeah, and I know this, I feel okay talking about it, but one of the things that got Mass DMF wanting to look at this,
yeah,
is because those fish that y'all are catching this year were a little bit north last year, and they were, yeah, teeny tiny.
Right, up
they
in
were
Cape
like
Cod
eight,
Bay.
8-10 inches long, and people were cast netting them thinking that they were something else.
Right.
Like mackerel or whatever else y'all have up there. So yep, they're cast netting 100 of these little things. Not a great idea, right?
No, not at all.
And then you go into this year, and they're what, about 2-pound-ish?
Yeah, I mean, they're anywhere from 2 pounds to maybe 8 pounds or so.
Okay.
We've seen some bigger ones. But yeah, okay. I mean, I know the Cape Cod Bay, you know, there were a lot of them over there. Even like I saw them like 3 seasons ago. We were catching them on sabikis while giant fishing. And, you know, they're a little micro bonito. I mean, literally like 3-4 inches long.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even more last year, and then this year, you know, they're like that 2-3 pound range. But there's a lot, yeah, of other ones that have showed up with them. I mean, in droves. I mean, we're catching regularly 20 to 30 of these things on a 4-hour charter.
Wow. So that is, you know, that is fantastic, because yeah, word gets out, and you're gonna, as a, you know, as a charter captain, word will get out. People right, want to chase these things. There's an avid following for them in New England, and you haven't had them for a while. Now, the downside of this is,
yeah,
when a billion things show up out of nowhere, all that effort shifts, mm-hmm, to the most available species.
Right.
And they get hit pretty hard. And we saw that in North Carolina last year with dock shots with like 50, 75 teeny tiny, you know, 1-2 pound bonito sitting on the bow of a boat in the sun,
oh,
in
yeah,
North Carolina. And, you know, everyone knows, you know, if you want to, they're great to eat, but you got to bleed them and ice them
right away. Otherwise they turn into a sponge.
Yeah. Kind of, I was thinking, yeah, like a kind of a stinky Slurpee.
Yeah. That's a better,
you know,
description.
Like when your boy grows up, one of my kids' favorite things to do was buy the jelly beans.
Yeah.
Where it was like Russian roulette. So like you look at the jelly bean and it's either vanilla or dirty sock.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, it has like some,
yeah, you don't
horrific,
know what flavor you're getting.
Oh, and he would, you know, he's like, I just remember him being like 4 years old and his hands were all sticky, you know, from eating jelly beans and stuff. And he'd pull out like the rotten egg one.
Oh, man.
And be like, Dad, it's buttered popcorn. And I'm like, I got to eat this. I got to eat a rotten effing egg jelly bean to entertain my kid. Great. Yeah. You know, and then everything, my wife caught on, and we had stinky jelly beans for years because my kid thought it was the funniest thing. Even came with a little thing that you spin.
Oh, yeah.
So you had to get a color. Oh, yeah. It was a whole thing. You'll be there soon, right?
Yeah, I need to check that out with my kid.
Yeah. Yeah, soon. Yeah, jelly bean Russian roulette, man. So, you know, like, they don't keep, and they stink, right, and yep, they're awful if you don't treat them right. And there's a lot of fish like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially anything kind of in that mackerel family.
Yeah, anything with a forked tail, man, you better know how to handle them. You get the greatest dinner ever, or you get something to throw in your garbage can. So yeah, point here is, you got people cast netting the itty bitty ones. They don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. You got no limit on them.
Yeah.
So yes, it's great that clients can go out and take two or three Bonito home and have a fantastic dinner with their family. Not so great when people are catching 40 or 50 of them and stacking a cooler in all day, day after day.
Yeah. And
y'all are actually seeing some of that behavior on the water, right?
There's definitely a lot of retention going on with the Bonito. So,
yeah.
You know, definitely overboard, I would say. You know, there's people keeping a couple, and I'm definitely keeping, you know, one, two, maybe three for clients on a charter. But
which is great.
Yeah. You know, and
clients get to go home with a fish. Fish tastes great.
Yeah, it's a rare opportunity and kind of a nice treat.
If you close your eyes and you think about it, you know, your client goes home with a fish or two, and then they get to prepare it for their family and friends.
Yeah.
And then they get to kind of remember this, you know, oh, let me tell you, I was fighting this fish, and I was Captain Ray.
Yeah, it's part of the whole experience.
It's like the gravy on the taters, you know what I mean? Like, it's great. That's like, that is a visceral connection.
Yep.
To the outdoors. So where's the gray area, or where's it go over into the bad place? The bad place is when people just excessively take home more than they can eat in a day or two, because these fish do not, there's nothing you can do
to
preserve a Bonito unless you have like a commercial operation with you know, nitrous tanks that flash freeze it and vacuum seal it. Like, it's really not worth.
Yeah. I mean, to keep these fish, you have to, like you said, immediately bleed them and then cool them down right away. So I'm either, you know, what I'm doing is getting those fish on board. I have my live well running. I pop their gill rakers, put them in my live well. They bleed out in a couple minutes and then they go straight on ice.
Yeah.
And those fish, instead of being mushy when I go to fillet them, they're basically rock hard, you know, and easy to fillet. That meat then stays cold, gets bagged, stays on ice, and it's good when you get it at home, and it's delicious if it's treated properly.
Yeah, 100%. And it's just, you know, it's just same thing. You take a deer, you take a turkey, you know, you take just yet. Preparation of that is critical in the product that you're going to have on your plate. The point is, though, you ain't freezing them, right? Like, I've never had a good experience tempting that with most coastal, but even like Spanish mackerel. Like, we catch a bunch of them down here. Like, just take a couple, a nice size.
Take what you can eat fresh.
Right. Yeah. So all that said, there's a lot of craziness going on because there are no limits right now. So I was extolling the virtues of Mass DMF, and we hear late last week that Albies and Atlantic Bonitos are going to be an agenda item on this upcoming meeting. And Ray is actually going to go there and speak for his business, the Guides Association and Conservation Minded Anglers. And we would invite anyone listening to this that's in that area and has that day off on Tuesday. You want to go speak for guardrail management. This is where your voice would really count. So we don't have the agenda yet. That agenda should be coming out shortly. When we do have it, it'll be in the blog, the corresponding blog to this podcast. And there's a couple of what I would refer to as hot button spicy items on the agenda that involve lobsters. I get on my knees every night before I go to sleep and thank God that I don't have to manage lobsters or blue crabs. So God bless the people that do, because I don't ever want to do that. So there's a couple spicy agenda items. This will probably, if I had to guess, be on the tail end of the agenda. We don't want everyone to have to sit in the room for 5 hours. So let us get this information all together. But this is a situation where this is not like a striped bass, you know, 1200 page document with 7 options where it has 3 sub options for each option. And we got to basically create like a Rolodex for people to like a cheat sheet for people even going to the meeting and be able to say anything, because it's so damn confusing. This is an easy one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is as easy as it gets.
Yeah. You're just showing support, essentially.
Yeah. So as always, one of the reasons why we're sending Ray or any of our other regular mass guides is because, you know, it's always nice to walk in a room and thank the state agency or the managing body for being proactive about management.
Yep.
And that's going to be our message. We fully support what you're doing. Mm-hmm. We know this is the first step down a long road. We're just asking you to take that step. And thank you for understanding that these two fish, these two species of fish, are becoming more and more critical to the coastal economies of Rhode Island and Massachusetts. I mean, what percentage you do it all, like you said.
Yeah.
What percentage of your trips have at least a little albi bonito?
Easily a third.
Wow.
And that's
stripers, bluefish, tuna.
Yeah.
And everyone's hot to trot for tuna. So
yeah, but everybody is even crazier for albies and bones, especially bones this year, but albies in general, I do a lot of albie trips.
Yeah.
And people go nuts for those fish, whether it's fly anglers or light tackle spin, everybody wants in on the action. And, for me personally, it's a really important fishery.
They're challenging too.
Yeah, they are. You have to be an accurate.
Albies can be infuriating.
You have to be a sniper. You have to be able to land in feeds or understand how these fish are acting and, blind cast areas and work areas accurately. I mean, there's a lot to it. And to consistently put fish in the boat, there's a lot to understand there. But it's an awesome fishery, and it's cool to be able to experience it every year. And
hey, man. I hearken back to this because I have cursed those things from North Carolina to Nantucket albies. Yep. Go down to Florida. You want to repair your ego?
Yeah.
Cody sent me a video last year.
Yeah.
That the albies had just showed up in his area between Stewart and Jupiter, where he does a ton of his fishing.
Yeah.
And all I saw were his feet on the back of his Pathfinder, and you hear, and you see a piece of chewing gum go into the water, this crystal clear, beautiful water down there. And an 18 pound albie just zips up and eats his chewing gum. Oh, and he's like, God. I think I found him. And you're just like,
yeah,
I've never in 52 years on this earth, I have never seen.
No, that's anything that's crazy.
Close to that. Yeah. I'm just like, God, I just,
no, we don't. They don't do that up here.
No. Like within 3 feet of his foot.
Yeah.
Just now, under the boat, in between the engine, and just like whoop.
Yeah.
On the jack plate.
They're never that relaxed up here. I've had them eat plugs and lures boat side and whatnot, but not because they're interested in being close to my boat.
Yeah. No. Just twee in the water. Gum drops about 6 inches. And it looked like one of them videos, Prince Edward Island, where the bluefin tuna,
eats a big herring out there.
Yeah, eats the seagull that's inadvertently in the harbor and doesn't know what's coming. I think everyone's seen that. So just imagine that with an 18 pound albie and a piece of chewing gum. Yeah. So they're smart as hell. So that kind of tells you about the people that want to pursue them. Right. They got eagle vision. They'll inspect stuff.
They're sport fishermen. They're not meat fishermen generally,
Yeah.
They're not in it to take home fish, which is also cool.
And it's I've always kind of said this about albies in particular, because they're a little more consistent than the Atlantic bonito.
Yeah.
It's a way. They're like the gateway drug.
Oh, yeah.
To offshore fishing. It's a way that legitimately a surf angler can catch a pelagic fish.
Yeah.
And kind of be like, whoa, that little thing pulled that hard. I want to catch a bigger one. How far do I have to go? So it's, it's this cool to me. It's this cool introduction, to a fish for people who, maybe you're just catching inshore species and they get a real flavor for what pelagic species are like,
I mean, as a kid, that was my first experience with any sort of pelagic species was false albacore and bonito.
When I
first hooked one of those and had something peel line that fast off my reel, I was like, I need to know about these and find them and catch more of them. I'm like, what was that? And then when I found out that they have bigger cousins further out into the ocean, or not even that far in some cases, then, you know, it just built from there. So
we used to we used to have these. Well, it's a shame, but we had these croaker, which are in drum family, you know, like they're in the same family as black drum, red drum, speckled trout. They're all drum family, cyanids. So most people just use them as bait. Mm-hmm. And most croaker that you see are like 4 or 5 inches long.
Yeah.
But here, for a long time, from like the late 90s to the 2010, we had croaker that were like 17 to 20 inches long.
Yeah.
And what I'm telling you, so like, I had a friend from New Jersey, my oldest friend, had this kid, me and this guy had been friends forever. And he come down to fish with me for stripers. Mm-hmm. And we were fishing a break on an oyster bar that went from like 6 feet to 36 feet, live bottom, like right all on the edge. And we were catching some nice stripers for us, you know, even back in the day, middle of the summer, you know, these fish were 28 to 34 inches. And they were catching them relatively shallow, even with the shelf. So we're, you know, using like 9 weights, and he throws a fly out and he hooks this fish. And I look at the rod and it's bowed up pretty good, and drag starts going, and he's, this thing's dancing him around the boat and everything. And he's like, oh, it's 36 to 36 inches, big fish. And he up comes like one of the biggest croaker I've ever seen. This thing was like 21, 22 inch. I mean, this was a horse croaker. It was enormous. And my buddy's like shocked, you know, and he's like, what is that? And it croaked when he said, and I'm like, it's a croaker. It's an Atlantic croaker. And he's like, okay, do they get bigger? And can we catch more of these things? You know? Yeah. So it's just like your experience. He's like, I don't care what this thing looks like. I don't care if other people use it as bait. Thing just peeled off, you know, 30 feet of drag on a 9 weight, a little less fish, you know.
Doesn't matter what it is, really, if it pulls and it's a fun fight.
Yeah. So, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Massachusetts is going to start, hopefully, fingers crossed, the process of managing guardrail management. Don't get mad. Y'all use them for shark bait. You're still going to be able to use them for shark bait. Don't worry. I'm not going to take anything away from you. We're just going to make sure that a crazy fishery doesn't open up where people are going and taking thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of these things per day, because I don't want to see y'all lose another fishery.
Yeah.
Not cool.
No.
It's 30-year trips.
We need it. You know, I mean, just the way the striped bass fishery here has changed on my side of the coast. You know, I need those hardtails in the fall to kind of like have a good business, basically.
So the hardtails, just so you know, everyone calls these things everything on earth. Mm-hmm. Hardtails is a New England name for them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. they call them Bonito.
Yeah.
In Florida.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Fat,
I mean,
Fat Alberts, Albies.
Yep. Yeah, and when I say hardtails, I mean, that's generalizing bones and albies.
Okay, so I didn't know that level of vernacular.
Yeah.
I just heard, basically, I figured hardtails were albies.
Yeah, a tail that I can grab, you know, like a fork. If I can grab that fish by the tail and basically put that between my two fingers there and hold it, that's a hardtail.
Okay, well, good to know. Not a New England local, I know that I know that is impossible to imagine. That is good information for me. So now I know
a little local knowledge.
Yeah, a little local knowledge. I don't sound as stupid as I normally do. So that's cool. Because let me tell you, dude, it's a redfish in Louisiana. It's a red drum in North Carolina.
Oh, interesting.
And when you go and target big red drum in North Carolina, they call them old drum. We're going fishing for old drum today.
Old drum.
When you go to Louisiana, bull red.
Bull Reds, yeah, down there.
And then here, to make it even more confusing, we call on the Atlantic slot redfish as a puppy drum. Mm-hmm. A puppy drum for them is a black drum, a juvenile black drum.
Wow.
So, like, you could sit on a boat and have a conversation, and next thing you know, you're fishing for black drum, and you're like, no, I wanted to catch red drum. And they're like, what's a red drum? And you're like, a puppy drum. And they're like, that's a black drum. And you're like, I give up. You know what I mean? I just want to catch something. Let's swipe the slate clean, boys.
We'll have to come up with a name for them up here, because they've been, people have been catching them up this way too. So
have you seen a few this year?
Not me personally, but I've seen pictures of several, and cobia, and, you know, just tarpon as well. Several tarpon caught up here.
We don't talk about tarpon here.
Yeah.
I'll just put it that way. Like, we don't.
Yeah. I mean, we don't actually have a fishery. So
we don't talk about it.
No,
we don't. That's not point. It's not worth talking about.
The T, like, word.
When you lose so much over 20 years and you finally get something that's halfway cool, you don't talk about it. Like, yeah. So I'll tell you, the redfish though, man, if you're a red drum or, you know, whatever, yeah, man, that's my heart and soul. Like, there's something about them. They are just cantankerous. They are tough, tough fish.
It's a cool fish.
Oh man, you hook one, and, you know, always love my stripers. They'll always be first in my heart.
But yeah, the reds fight different. I went to school in St. Augustine for college, and yeah, I caught a lot of them down there in shallow water, and, like, you know, almost sight fishing for them, but the water's so murky, you're really just looking for, like, a head wake.
Yeah.
But just a really fun fishery, and in shallow water, they're like, they just kind of bulldog. So really,
it's just straight away as fast. Yeah. They're heading for the Azores, man. Like, it's different when you get them in open water, like the big drum, mm-hmm, or mostly an open water fishery. Yeah, we do catch them shallow, but here it's a lot of it's open water, especially in the middle of summer, and they fight different. You know, they go down, it's a tug of war. But like, somewhere where my folks' place is in Charleston, they have a grass flat that's right across the creek. Yeah. And you just take a 10 boat, the tides there are enormous.
Yeah.
And you take a 10 boat on a king tide and just get a little trolling motor and just go boop right up on the grass flat.
Yeah.
Pitch out a hook or whatever and just hop out of the thing and walk around. And I'm telling you, man, it's hard for people, like, if you've never done it.
No, I gotta
see
that
grass moving a little bit, and you know there's one down there. Oh. And you see, like, you just see, like, the grass just the top of the grass twitching, and there's like a little periwinkle snail holding on to the very tip of the grass blade, and you can hear it's like screams, you know, for the tide not to come up anymore, because there's like eight redfish milling just around. Like,
looking at
it's
it.
Just like, help me. Oh, God, make the water go down, you know, and like all the fiddler crabs are getting annihilated. It's a fun way to fish. But I digress, man. Maybe one day you'll have a red fishery in Rhode Island, one that you can target, but it's not today.
Yeah,
today we're going to focus on Albies and Bonito.
That's right.
So again, this is day one. This is where the process begins.
Yep.
The state agency is to be applauded. Thank goodness they are doing this, what we preach every day, precautionary management, proactive management. Get something on the books before there's a problem.
Yeah.
There's a problem, it's too late.
Yeah, no, I'd say they're doing the right thing by doing it now. Because, you know, not only are there more anglers on the water, but there's more people kind of targeting and taking these fish home because we're seeing such numbers of them. So I don't want to say anything that isn't untrue, but I mean, there's definitely some shady stuff going on with these fish as far as people working together and maybe, you know, creating some sort of underground commercial fishery. I've seen stuff this year that I haven't seen in the past, and I know other guys have too. And it's just, it's good that is doing something now, so nothing bad happens later.
It short sells real licensed commercial fishermen.
Yeah.
You know, because they're trying to do things the right way. They're logging their fish. They have their permits, trying to follow the rules. Yeah. And then somebody goes out and catches 50 bonito and sells them in the back door in a restaurant. No accountability, no nothing, cash and carry.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
No, especially when there's other people making a living off that fishery as almost a catch and release fishery.
Yeah.
And a lot of other people making a living off of products that relate to that fishery locally. And, you know, there's a lot of revenue that is generated here because of those fisheries, whether it's hotels, gas stations, Airbnbs, rods and reels, tackle, you name it, guides, et cetera.
And, so, you know, good Lord always provides, man. Like I tell people, you know, I don't want, you know, I want to go like, this is all positive stuff. I don't want to be a dour or wet rag. But like the question that we should all be asking ourselves when we're talking about guardrail management and why, because it's like, what would we do without these fish?
Yeah.
You know, how would your business look? How would your business operate? How would the hotels, everything you mentioned, the hotels, the rod companies, because I mean, I'm hearing
yeah.
a lot from retailers and manufacturers that they are feeling the bite of less striped bass. It's very real.
Yeah, it is.
It's very real.
We feel it here. I mean, you know, I feel like some of it is water temp related with the fish that we see here, but obviously there's a serious population issue as well. But just over the last 10 years, a lot of the fish that used to take up residence down on the south shore where I am in Westport, Buzzards Bay area, those fish are now in the cooler water that's up, you know, Boston, New Hampshire. And even those guys are saying the fish are passing by them and going up to Maine. So, you know, we need all the fisheries we can get down here.
You know, I'll tell you.
And the striped bass fisheries changed so much that it's...
Remind me to send you more research from Mass DMF. But they've been doing that DNA research.
Yep.
So it's pretty interesting. Y'all get both the Hudson fish and the Chesapeake fish.
Yeah.
But it's weird, they set up in completely different areas in Cape Cod. Ben Gahagan at Mass DMF, along with that very good team, Micah Dean, you know, all of them, yeah. great striped bass scientists. So they did DNA research and they were able to like cross reference it. And, you know, we can basically look at a striped bass DNA at this juncture mm-hmm. and they can tell you what river it spawned in the Chesapeake. Not just wow. like, hey, it's a Chesapeake fish.
Yeah, like
they
what
can say
tributary
it's a,
off of
it's
that.
A Potomac, it's a chop tank, it's a Rappahannock, wow. you know, Upper Bay. This is a you know, an Elk River, Bohemia River fish. Like
wow.
It's pretty fascinating. And through that work, Ben was able to kind of map where these fish mm-hmm. like, for example, that great fishery on those giant fish.
Yeah.
That like Boston on the flats. Harbor.
Oh,
the
okay.
Boston yeah, Harbor yeah. fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are not, that's most likely the 1996 year class from wow. Chesapeake Bay, that giant robust year class,
yeah.
which I will say this, we're going to do another podcast, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
But Mass DMF has done more research on stripers. And stripers are an awful lot older than we think they are.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a great teaser. So you've seen those charts
yeah.
where it says 18 years old, 50 inches,
mm-hmm.
total BS.
Really?
So state agencies don't have the funds to do the electron microscope otolith.
Oh, okay.
So they've been doing just counting the rings on scales. It's a lot okay. cheaper.
Yeah.
Striped bass don't get a ring every year after 8 years.
Wow.
So Mass DMF did 8,000 otoliths. And this is, I'm going to do a whole other blog, whole other everything on this.
Yeah.
They did 8,000 otoliths.
Pretty good sample.
Take a guess how old a 42-inch, this is average, you know, yeah. That those charts where they have the little plots and there's the line going through the average.
Right. So, and I'm sure each fish can be different in this. Yeah, and that.
There's top right. and bottom extremes. But with that size sample set, you get a pretty good average. Uh-huh. Take a guess how old a 42-inch fish is.
I almost don't want to, but.
This is
25.
So 42 is 16.
Okay.
Take a guess how old a 46-inch fish is. Average. 42.
If a 42 is 16.
42 is 16.
So.
4 more inches, 46.
Yeah.
How old would you think a 46-inch fish is average?
Maybe closer to 20, like maybe 18, 20.
30.
Wow.
14 years.
That's crazy.
To grow 4 inches.
Wow. So when... You know, when we look at these fish, like, oh yeah, they're all similar size class. They must be about the same age. They're not even 4 inches. They can be a decade apart.
Twice as old.
That's wild.
16 years to 42.
Yeah.
30 years to 46. And, you know, you think about it like biologically, I think a lot of animals are this way. You know, you get to a certain size and you're robust. And we know all these big fish are female. Mm-hmm. So I think they're putting more of their energy into egg production.
Yeah, at that point, rather than growing any bigger, they're kind of as big as they need to be.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so really something to think about with these big fish.
Yeah.
But another day, another podcast.
Yeah, I don't even want to get into
harvesting. Holy jeez. Yeah.
Harvesting fish that size. Oh.
Let's focus on the good stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And the good stuff is Ray is... not going to be fishing on the 17th, and he is going to be speaking for all of us in person at that meeting.
Yep.
And one more time, it starts at 9 a.m. September 17th, Kingston Townhouse, 26 Evergreen Street, Kingston, Mass. We have our fingers crossed that we will have the agenda by tomorrow.
Yep.
That's when we'll put the blog up. We'll have some talking points if y'all want to actually go and stand up for these fish. But this is a very positive thing. Ray is a very positive guy. That's why we got him going. We got some Hellraisers too. I'm glad they're booked. I'm just kidding. They know who I'm talking about too. So Ray has the right temperament for this meeting. Grateful, thankful. Guardrail management, and we're here to support you through the process.
Absolutely.
So y'all check out the blog. Thank you so much, Ray, for joining us. And Ray, give a shout out to your website, your Instagram handle, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if people are like, hey, that guy sounded a lot cooler than Tony, I want to go fishing with him so they can find you.
I don't know how cool I am, but I can put you on some fish, hopefully. So you can find me at nesportfishing.com or my Instagram is Salt of the Earth Sport Fishing. And
great name. Ray is Salt of the Earth. I'll tell you just from my experience on the boat with him. If you're a dad or a mom and you love fishing, Ray is an ideal person to take a kid with you and really be treated well with patience and have the kid just get ate up with fishing. Also really good if you're just the kind of person that's like, you know what? I just want to go out. I want to see some cool stuff, catch some fish. I want to learn a little bit about the fishery, you know, give Ray a try, especially if you have kids, because he has the right temperament and the right patience to make your kid fall in love with it. And then that gives you more excuses to go fishing.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like you're just you're padding the stats for the future, you know? So thank you so much for joining us, Ray. Thanks so much for going to the meeting.
Yeah, no,
even it's bigger.
My pleasure. Whatever I can do to help the fisheries. So
excellent podcast. Thank you for your time, y'all. We're moving the ball down the field. We know it's slower than we want. We're moving the ball down the field on Albies and Bonito. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you on the next guidepost.
Thanks, Tony.